Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast, your source for policy rants and raves from tech freedom, your Washington, D.C. advocate for the freedom to tinker and innovate. I'm Evan Schwartzschreiber, your host. On today's show, the war on hacking. As more and more hacks affect hundreds of millions of people and even billions around the world, with major companies like Sony and Target getting hacked and the U.S. government getting hacked, healthcare companies, what's being done to win the war on cyber attacks? Is this a winnable war at all? Joining me to discuss this is Morgan Wright, a cybersecurity analyst for major national media outlets and a senior fellow at the Center for Digital Government. He has testified before Congress about issues of cybersecurity, and he has previously appeared on this podcast. Morgan, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Evan.
So if 2015 was the year of the hack, as our friend Shane Tooze at AEI said, and 2016 is going to be even bigger, what is the state of play for cyber attacks in the United States and around the world?
I'm reminded of my favorite Monty Python movie, The Holy Grail, and the famous line, run away, run away. You know, it's going to get worse. I mean, actually, I would say 2014 was the year of the hack, 2015, the mega hack, 2016, the mega, mega hack. We are seeing increases in things on ransomware where they encrypt your files and literally hold it for ransom. We're seeing increases in data breaches, identity theft, still the number one consumer complaint for 15 years in a row at the FTC. I'm not sure how this gets better for a while, you know?
Well, on that optimistic note, let's get into some specifics. What's being done right now to deal with this? This is an obvious problem, and maybe there's been a few seminal moments like the Sony hack when we really just realized that a country as poor and starving as North Korea could potentially bring down a major company like Sony, and when over 20 million federal employees' information was breached at the Office of Personnel Management, and anyone who even applied to the federal government for a job, their information was compromised. It's clear that this is a major problem. What's being done, at least let's start with the companies themselves, what are they doing to combat this problem?
Milton Friedman one time talked about, he wasn't a big fan of the courts, but he said litigation is a proper response to some of this stuff. So I think people are starting to see what happens with the Target breach. You know, both the CIO and CEO got fired on that. You looked at Sony. One of the things I went on the air about Sony about, and I was on the record before, I said, to me it was North Korea. I said it publicly, actually, on Fox News with Greta Van Susteren one time before they even discovered it was that. Because these things are sponsored by nation states. That's what worries me about some of this stuff. So I think we're going to see a rise in actors who are state-sponsored or have at least state sanction. And it's like Sandworm, a group in Russia with the critical infrastructure, Black Energy. So, I mean, this almost reminds me of I told a story one time about a college football coach. Would you allow a college football coach? And this gets into what we're doing about it. Let's say the number one team in the land, but next year he says, hey, you know what? Next year our offense is going to be good, but our defense sucks. And that's the current state. We have good offense. I mean, trust me, NSA, in fact, you were talking about OPM. OPM now has been taken over. The site has been taken over by the Department of Defense.
Wow.
They've got a few, I can't remember how many millions, but they've got a few hundred million to rebuild the OPM site. Full disclosure, my SF-86 was disclosed in that. It took 9 months to get my notice.
Wow.
Yeah, talk about government efficiency.
Yeah, I feel like every day working in D.C., I meet another person whose personal information was compromised by the OPM hack, and you're just the latest.
Yeah, well, there's 21 million of us, so me and my close friends. But
at least.
You know, what we're challenged with, at least on the private sector, too, is the, they were driven so much by shareholders, by stock price, you know, at least publicly traded companies. And so there used to be an old joke, when you build a network, you had three things to worry about: price, speed, and security, pick two. Security always kind of came in last.
Right.
And now people are realizing is that security has to be a fundamental building block of anything you do. It can't be a bolt-on. Can you imagine buying a brand new car and having the car dealer come in later and says, oh, we forgot to put in the airbags, and they bolt on airbags? Can't do that anymore. The price of failure is too high, as we saw with healthcare.gov, as we saw with OPM, as we saw with Target, we saw with Sony. So, and there's many more out there, healthcare organizations. Healthcare, by the way, has become the number one target ahead of retail now.
Wow. So Shane echoed that sentiment. She said it's really about security by design. It's that when you take on a new product and you're doing research and development, that you're not thinking after you've designed the product, how can we secure it? It's part of the actual work that's done
launching
the project.
It's the Internet of Things.
Yeah.
I was in the RSA conference out in San Francisco the first part of March of this year. I had a chance to talk with Dr. Max Singus from Google, because he was doing a presentation about Internet of Things. And my question was, have we thought through the ethics of connecting all of these devices, medical devices, insulin pumps, heart monitors to the internet. We don't even have, you know, in the medical field, they have bioethics, they have medical ethics, we don't even have that for these devices that yet affect everything the doctors do, you know, and the cardiologists do. So there's a whole new area out there that still needs to be discussed because security is not built into these things. Hospitals are so vulnerable to these kinds of attacks. I tell you, that's why they've become the number one target.
Is it because hospitals, I guess, never really thought that they were going to be a target of cyber attacks and it wasn't something they considered? And there was a recent case where a hospital...
Hollywood Presbyterian in Los Angeles.
They paid $17,000 to get their information as a form of ransomware, as you suggested, yeah. Where they steal the information, they hide it, and then say, you need to pay us to get it back.
Right.
So healthcare is certainly an example. But of course, these technologies, as they pose challenges and concerns, the vast majority of their use is going to be for good. And the Internet of Things has the potential to add tens of billions of dollars to the economy. Mm-hmm. So it's important that in our reaction to these things that we don't kind of kill the golden goose and stifle innovation and economic growth in our effort to secure ourselves. But so you mentioned some of the things that the private companies are doing, like security by design, building security right. into their products, which is especially important for the Internet of Things, where we're going to have things like your refrigerator and coffee maker.
Your refrigerator is going to launch a cyber attack on
exactly.
you at 3 in the morning.
You've got Amazon's Alexa, the voice-activated speaker, that's integrating with Wi-Fi-enabled products. So let's talk about the role of government. At the end of December, in a must-pass omnibus spending budget bill...
As it always is.
You know, when you've got a controversial bill in Washington, it's a lot easier to just toss it into the budget, which has to pass or the government runs out of money, than to debate the bill. And that was an issue that some privacy advocates had with the Cyber Information Sharing Act, known as CISA for short. It's a bill that was aimed at incentivizing private companies to share more information on cyber attacks with the government. As I said, it was roped into the budget at the 11th hour. Not much debate about it. Morgan, what are your thoughts on CISA? Do you think that was the right approach for government to take to combat cyber attacks?
You know, I'm a big fan of information sharing. I worked on projects in the government and the intelligence community. I think it's a vital aspect of it. You know, it's one of those things is what the old Zen master said one time, said, we'll see. I mean, is it the right approach? We'll see. At least there was some activity on it. At least people have recognized the need. But I'll tell you, the biggest thing they have to overcome, and we've talked about it before, but it's the Snowden effect. I've told people, I said, the reason that Apple is moving to encrypt what they do on the iPhone, Google did, you know, Microsoft did, is once the revelations came out of the PRISM program and NSA, whether it was lawful or not, and it was, according to them, it was lawful, they had the authorities to do it. To me, it was just the sheer arrogance that I saw in these slides when this information was exposed to people in the NSA, instead of being humble and being crime fighters and protecting the U.S., you know, there was this arrogance that, hey, look, we broke in. I think that didn't sit well with a lot of people. It didn't sit well with me, and I'm a law and order guy. I mean, I said, that's arrogance. So we've created this culture of distrust between the private sector and the government. Now, you can't legislate trust. You can't mandate trust. You can tell people they have to work together, but you can't make them trust or like each other. I think that's the problems they've got to solve first, is how do we solve the philosophical bridge that divides us right now? Because once you solve that, once everybody understands, you're not going to get everything you want, Evan. I'm not going to get everything I want. But at least if we can accomplish a majority of what we need to, and we can walk away feeling like we've both benefited out of this, that's where we've got to get. But you can't legislate. I think it's tough to legislate this. I think it's a good start to make people have that conversation. But I think at the end of the day, it's still people sitting down and said, let's do it ourselves rather than being forced to do it.
So you mentioned on a previous podcast about social media and terrorism that you prefer kind of a multi-stakeholder model.
Yes.
where tech companies, law enforcement, the various stakeholders who are involved in an issue get together and make policy rather than having that legislative hammer. But what we have, law on the books, CISA, and you say it's too early to tell. You know, it's only been since the end of December that it passed, whether it's going to have a major effect on combating cyber attacks. But let's talk about some of the concerns that privacy advocates had with the bill. Free market groups in mid-December wrote a coalition letter, including Tech Freedom, the R Street Institute, and the Niskanen Center. They said the provisions are unlikely to increase the government's ability to detect, intercept, and thwart cybersecurity attacks, but it would decrease accountability and public trust, as you just mentioned, the Snowden effect. They argued that CISA exacerbated the Snowden effect. What would you say to that concern that there really wasn't a problem of companies not being willing to share information necessarily, and that this bill wasn't really going to do anything to help anything at all?
You know, good point. I don't really know. I mean, I wish I could come in and say I know the answer to everything. Here's some of the things I do know in terms of working on the information sharing. I've done this for a long time. I think people, sometimes you share information when it's in your own self-interest, and then we've got to get people to sharing when it's in everybody's best interest. And I think one of the things I saw that came out of the RSA Security Conference are these providers now that are doing a top-down approach to where when one, what becomes knowledge of one becomes knowledge of all now. And I'd like to see a collective, the Financial Services Information Sharing Analysis Center, the FSISAC, has been sharing threat information since 2000. I mean, these folks knew that we don't want the government coming in, but they said it is so important to our trust with our customers. They're a heavily regulated industry, so they've been sharing information. I think one of the models needs to be is that we've got to do more bridge building, partnership building. Will this information work? I think, look, here's what's going to happen, and I predict it now. As Arnold said, heal me now, believe me later. You know? There will be a breach. There will be information disclosed. Somebody will say, see, we told you. And this is a natural, this is going to happen. When you build things, things break, you know, and you have to build them better the next time. There are things about this that are going to break, that are not going to work out. Information is going to get disclosed, and we're just going to need to suck it up and move forward to realize at the end of the day, what really needs to be done is we do need to do a better job of sharing information. Is this the best way to do it? No. Is it the only way to do it right now that's mandated, you know, by legislation? Yes.
Okay, so yeah, let's get into the role that government has with our information, because that was a major concern with the bill, is that institutions like the Department of Homeland Security are probably, as these privacy advocates argued, best equipped to handle information about cyber attacks, because they're, I guess, more secure than OPM, which was obviously not secure at all. But one of the problems in the bill is that it allows DHS to then share information with other federal agencies, which might not be as secure. And then it also calls for automatic info sharing with institutions like the NSA and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. So as one of the 20 million or so people who had their information compromised in the OPM hack, what do you think about a law that says to the Department of Homeland Security, go ahead and share your information with the Department of Defense, go ahead and share it with the NSA, you know, the more the merrier, when has government really proven that it can be a responsible steward of our personal information?
I am frightened of the aspect of them sharing my personally identifiable information with anybody in government right now, because this is probably not politically correct to say, but our cyber defense sucks. I give it a grade of D-, you know, close to F in many places. Offense, you know, in the intelligence community, we got neat stuff there. I know, you know, I'm sure. Not that I know. Don't audit me. You know,
that's top secret.
I have no classified information on my MacBook that I'm aware of. It wasn't marked as classified. But on the other hand, though, you know, I thought I was under the mistaken belief that 35 pages of my life, every detail of who I've known, where I've worked, what I've done, medical conditions, family history, things like that. You told me that I can't work and do this work for the government unless I give you this information.
Right.
You, on the other hand, didn't protect. And when I found out that this information wasn't even encrypted, not only was it not encrypted, the technology systems were so old it couldn't even be encrypted. It just proved a mantra I've used for years, which is yesterday's technology, tomorrow. That seems to be the operating philosophy in many people in government. And this has to stop.
Yeah, one of the issues with CISA was that it didn't. Privacy advocates were concerned that it didn't require companies to scrub the personally identifiable information. The requirement wasn't strong enough. That it didn't limit non-cyber law enforcement use of the information. So the NSA, the DHS, they're looking at information related to cyber attacks. But, oh, hey, by the way, we happened to find out something about a drug case. It'd be crazy not to use that.
You know what this sounds like? This sounds like advertising. We may use your information to share with third parties to have targeted offers for you.
Yeah,
you know?
There's a lot of people who think that the drug war has been a massive failure and a mistake. And I guess they kind of hate the idea that information being shared for cyber attacks purposes, which is great in theory, when we all want to be more secure, that somehow that's going to be used by the government to track down a meth dealer.
Yeah, you know, and that's going to be difficult. And let me tell you, what I think is going to happen on the private sector side is they are going to make sure that they stay on the side of being cautious, and because they're worried about litigation, they're worried about shareholders, they're worried about, you know, what their perception. They're actually, private sector are in the business of profit. They don't get to print money. Only the government gets to print money. They have to make money. Right. So they're going to be concerned to make, they're going to go to a lot of extents to make sure they're not sharing this information. On the other hand, is if they share information, even if it's scrubbed, but if it's attributed to, say, company X or company Y, and people find out that company X, Y, our information was breached, even though there's nothing in there, it doesn't matter about reality at that point. It's all about perception. Perception trumps reality, and people are going to think, here we go again. So I think the government doesn't have as much incentive to protect the information as the private sector does. And quite frankly, even with Target and Sony and Anthem and stuff, I still think the private sector is a bit, does a better job at protecting information than the government.
Right, and then there's, of course, the major distinction between private sector and government use of data, which is that a private sector use of data, it's by contract. We all sign terms and conditions every day that are they're long and we don't read them, but that's a contract and we're bound by it. Whereas the government, they are not necessarily bound.
And you don't
by
have a choice.
Yeah, it's, you can't take your business elsewhere. So I wanted to touch on a major testimony you gave on healthcare.gov, the infamous launch of healthcare.gov, focused on the fact that the website was clunky and it didn't work and people couldn't sign up for healthcare. But there was another major issue kind of that got, you know, pushed aside by the basic problems with the website usability, was its lack of cybersecurity. And your testimony arguably changed the way that the government thinks about how it handles personal information. So can you talk about what you talked about in the testimony and the effect that it had?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things I noticed, and it was just simple, and this is what blew me away, is why am I a little Kansas farm boy able to find this out, and all these billions of dollars and millions of dollars weren't able to find it out? But they were collecting information up front that could be used to personally identify people. It wasn't encrypted. It wasn't HTTPS. And in fact, recently, even when they said, oh, we only collect now information on your age and if you're a smoker, that wasn't even encrypted, so you could still intercept that information. And so their collection practices is that you had to give so much information before you could even go into the marketplace. So one of the changes they made after that was they changed all of that to where you got to go into the marketplace, you got to see what was there before you had to disclose personally identifiable information.
Right, I can see my healthcare options without having to
Don't hold my information hostage before you tell me what my options are, right?
Right.
And I'll tell you the other thing, though, that just blew me away is looking at this stuff is that their basically security plan was an Excel spreadsheet with about 25 lines on this. Part of my testimony now, which the Inspector General's report and OMB report came out and said, look, there was no top-down management of the program. That is a license for failure. That is a recipe, I should say, for failure. The other thing was I said there's going to be fraud in this system because you don't have the proper checks, the proper controls. And the IG's report came out and talked about the immense amount of fraud that's in this system. So, you know, people said, well, look, we've launched and nothing's happening. Guys, this is a steamroller. This isn't Matt Damon and Jason Bourne and, you know, pop, 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 we've got an action movie here. This is more like the steamroller in Austin Powers, 5 minutes of screaming, you know, here it comes. But man, when it hits you, it crushes you. And this is what's happening now.
So, Morgan, looking ahead, as you said, you know, 2014, the year of the hack, 2015, the year of the mega hack, 2016, God only knows. what do you think is going to happen with cybersecurity issues? How is the government going to respond? Is it just going to stick with CISA? Are more things going to happen? Just kind of give us your thoughts on what we're going to see in 2016. What should our listeners be looking out for in the realm of cybersecurity?
All right. Well, put zero stock into what I'm going to say. Don't take this to Vegas and bet on it. So this is just an opinion.
I'm not sure that the sports book has started. allowing you to bet on cyber attacks yet, but that'd be kind of fun.
Think about it. Who's going to get hacked next? It's kind of like, you know, the old game they used to play. But no, I think CISA will become irrelevant at some point because I think people realize it's in their best interest to shell. I think CISA will just, not that it'll go away, but it'll become less relevant. Not irrelevant, but less relevant.
They're going to share the information whether or not.
Because they need to. It's a business imperative. It's a moral imperative. We talked about issues of terrorism. But guys, real quickly, let's not forget we also have organized crime. We have missing kids. We have a fugitive cases. We have homicide cases. I've been up on electronic intercepts on homicide cases. We still have real crime that has to be solved that this still all affects. One of the things I see is the rise of ransomware. More and more, we're talking about Hollywood Presbyterian out in Los Angeles. You know what makes this difficult to solve is now all these guys are using Bitcoin. So with the new blockchain and the technology, even though it's a public register, you have no idea who's getting the money. So could that also help with terrorism financing? Absolutely. So I see the rise of ransomware. I see mobile devices. A lot of companies have already published reports talking about the threats of mobile devices and how they are now an entry point into your system. So as we get the Internet of Things and more things that are connected, we now have more doors and more keys to those doors out there that are going to let people in. I think what's going to happen is, here's the philosophy I had, is you got to just know if you're not hacked, everybody's been hacked. There's two types of companies out there. Those have been broken into and those that don't know they have been.
Right.
Get rid of that. You need to start thinking about, how do you protect the data? How do you respond faster? How do you have the fastest fire department on the block? How do you recover from that? And I'll tell you what, the biggest thing that kills small businesses, you know, and even government, lack of just doing things like backing up. You can solve a lot of ransomware problems by simply having a current backup. You delete the ransomware, you reinstall your stuff and say, don't quit doing stupid stuff like clicking on these links and downloading files and looking at stuff you're not supposed to be looking at.
I'll share a personal example. My dad's company was hit with a ransomware attack, and because they had backups, they basically said, we're not going to pay the ransom. Instead, we're going to just delete everything we've done over the past 12 hours. We're going to lose, you know, a day's worth of work, but at least we're not going to have to pay the ransomware because we delete all that stuff. And it basically is just like a time machine. And we go back to the moment when the ransomware hit, and then we start everything over. So, I mean, my dad's company, it's a small business. It's been hit. So clearly this is not just something that's going to affect major companies. It's going to affect smaller companies as well.
Absolutely.
Well, that's it for today's show. My guest has been Morgan Wright, a cybersecurity analyst for major media outlets and a senior fellow at the Center for Digital Government. He's testified before Congress about these issues. He's testified before this podcast, and we'll look forward to having him on the show again. Morgan, thank you for joining me.
Evan, thanks, guys.
Oh, and for the good of the order, you could check him out online at identitysecurity.com or follow him on Twitter at MorganWright_US. Follow us on Twitter at Tech Freedom or on Facebook.com/Tech Freedom. Find this podcast in the iTunes store or on your favorite podcast app. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review. It will really help others find the show. Thank you for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.